Are you ready?
Just get...
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Just get it arranged here a little bit.
Run, 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 run away. Psycho killer. Hey everybody, what's that show? This is Bob.
Hey everybody, Miles.
It's Miles the Wicked.
Miles the Wicked.
Yeah. He's got wicked farts tonight, people. Watch out.
I am the gap between Anna Paquin's teeth. That's right. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. I don't... does that mean you can fit between the gap, or what are you talking about?
I don't know. I've been watching a lot of True Blood recently, and I just...
Oh, really?
Yes. Very, very good. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've got a True Blood story for you tonight.
It cured my ED, yeah.
I have at the end of the night, don't let me forget, I have a True Blood story just for you.
All right.
So anyway, I hope I'm not going to bore everybody, but I'm talking about this trip because I actually took notes while I was gone on this long vacation so I would remember kind of the funny bits, the highlights of humor that, you know.
Yes.
So, but anyway, so the first thing is... when we get to London, I talked about New York last week. Go listen to that. There's not going to be a recap. We went to Iceland, and then Reykjavik has the best bathrooms. Anyway, so we fly from Iceland then to London.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you that Iceland, this time I was on a 767, which is a great plane because my knees don't grind into the seat in front of me while I'm sitting in it.
Yeah.
And they have these little, basically, tablets embedded in the back of the seats, and they give you movies you can watch. So I watch movies on my flight from Reykjavik to London, which is nice and distracting, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to have so much jet lag, so I stayed up all night. We basically flew overnight, and the sun never set on us. So we flew out of New York, like, almost in the evening. We got up north. Of course, the sun's still up because we're in summertime. And so, you know, the sun never sets up north. And then by the time we got to London, it was morning already because of the time, you know, 6 hours difference. So,
right.
Or whatever it is, 5 hours from New York. But anyway, 6 hours from where I live. And... And so we had kind of a relaxing day, got all situated and everything. And my son wanted to get Pizza Hut in London, so I was trying to oblige, and there was a Pizza Hut that was within kind of walking distance. It was a little bit of a trek, but that night I told him I would go get him Pizza Hut, and I get to this Pizza Hut, and it's run by the Lebanese Jerry Lewis. This guy.
Oh boy!
I come in there. No, he's more like Jerry Langford, Jerry Lewis than he is, you know, kind of the Nutty Professor. But so I go into the place. You know, I'm in London, and you know, he's like, Pizza Hut is not what people necessarily in London, I don't think, want. But there was still people there. There was quite a few people.
Sure.
And I ordered him a cheese pizza, which is what he wanted to, and I was going to take it back. So I had to sit there and wait, and I got this guy that looks very much like a Lebanese Jerry Lewis, and I just could not take my eyes off him, which was kind of wacky, you know. I was kind of jet-lagged and everything, and he was very, you know, very nice and accommodating and everything, but it just was weird because he really did look like Jerry Lewis, like a Jerry Langford, King of Comedy style Jerry Lewis, which I, you know, that's just a funny aside there.
But
that was kind of one of my first, weird things that happened in London, and I've talked about crazy traffic in New York. It's not any better when you get to London, so. Except everybody's on the wrong side of the car. What?
That's his first man crush, but not his last.
Yeah. Well, the steering wheel's on the wrong side, and so I kept trying to get into the driver's side, and the guy was like, hey, it's other side.
Hey, Ringo,
hey. You know, he's like, we get picked up at the airport by our car service, and it's like this Mercedes van or whatever, and everybody else is piled in the back, so I'm like, I'll take the front seat, and I walk over because I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get into the driver's side. Hey!
What is it, Paul McCartney? Hey, Ringo, hey, what are you doing?
Hey, what are you doing? That's my chair.
What are you doing, man? Moonlighting.
Don't take away my chair. So, so I was just kind of, it happened more than once, and I just could not wrap my head around this whole steering wheel on the other side business. It just was not making any sense to me, you know. And so we went to a play in what is London's Broadway, which is called the West End. I'm not sure I don't know if this is really popular. I don't know what people will know and people won't. But so it was a great area. It was, London was very much like New York in a sense with all the people and everything. But the buildings weren't as tall, you know.
Yeah.
And the West End, you know, Broadway is just all these skyscrapers and everything. And the West End is like a meandering village of just random roads and little theaters. So we go see this movie, this play called The Play Goes On, and we sit up in the last row of actually a fairly small theater. There's only probably like 150 people in it or something. It was it's supposed to come to the States, but it's a really funny play. It's very Python-esque in its delivery, or Fawlty Towers, if you will, you know, more John Cleese-ish. And they even had a character who was the inspector who was very, very much had to be based on John Cleese. I mean, it was so Cleesian, if we could say, coin a word here or something. And, but the terrible part was, it was one kind of bad thing and one weird thing was that my wife, it was me and my wife and my daughter, and my wife can laugh really loud if it's, you know, funny stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Well, she's laughing louder than, like, anybody. So it was a little bit embarrassing. We're at the top of the back of the theater, and she's just, it really is funny, but I mean, they're all kind of doing these polite laughs, and she's, you know, really laughing, and my daughter's kind of joining in with them, and I'm like, sitting there thinking, I don't know. Loud, brash Americans here.
Listen, mate.
That's right, trying to, you know, these are all cultured people here. But it was a really funny play, and I would suggest if you happen to, you know, have a chance. It was really put on well, and if it comes around, you know, it might be worth the watch. So, but the other thing is, the funny thing is, of course, at intermission, my wife's like, you know, at the ready, because she's got to go use the restroom. And so, you know, as soon as intermission hits, she sprints down to get to the bathroom. Because, you know, normally, fills up, right?
Well, if you don't flush,
Well, I mean, just, you know, everybody goes in there, especially for women. It's harder because, you know, it takes longer sometimes, and there's usually not as many stalls and whatnot. And so she comes back, and she's, like, got this look on her face like it was, you know, some kind of puzzling affair. And I said, well, what's going on? And she's like, there was hardly anybody in the bathroom. I'm like, well, maybe they got more than one. She's like, no, I got lost. I had to ask somebody where the bathroom was. I get there thinking I'm going to have to wait in line. You know, the whole intermission is going to be blown, right? But no, it was hardly anybody in there. And she's like, they're all at the bar. So apparently they had a bar in this theater, you know, downstairs. And apparently everybody rushed to the bar to get a refill to go watch the rest of the play. I was like, well, there you go. That's interesting, isn't it?
Sounds like Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was like, I would have never realized that. You know, kind of an interesting thing. So, this is our easing into the European nature of things. Our family went to a restaurant, and I think it was Nando's, which is a kind of like a jerk chicken kind of thing. I mean, it really was tasty, but it's kind of like spicy food and whatnot. And I guess we were being kind of raucous because this lady kept giving us these looks and kind of doing those tisk tisks to us, you know, because we were being kind of loud. So that was you know, a good way to get in with the country, I guess. But
hello, mate.
Hello. Oh my!
Hello.
Oh my! They're eating their jerk chicken and acting like animals.
Shut your teeth.
Yeah. So it was a little bit. I mean, even I picked up on her. You know, whatever you want to call it, her uncomfortableness with us at the restaurant, and that's normally something that I don't really pay attention to. So, and we must have really been over the top. I don't know. We were all jet lagged. It was, you know, a whole thing going on.
Yeah.
So, then I'm trying to get my notes to come up here. Oh, then we went to Stonehenge.
On this little day trip. Pictures.
Yeah, we went to Stonehenge, which is something that that was kind of my thing. I'm like, I would really like to go to Stonehenge. And I mean, we did other stuff in London. We saw Buckingham Palace and the Tower of London, and we went to Windsor Castle, and you know, we did all that kind of stuff. We went and saw we actually took a cruise on the Thames and saw the London Eye and all that kind of stuff, right? But one of the things I wanted to do was to go to Stonehenge. So we took a trip out to Stonehenge, which was really quite fascinating because it's changed, I guess. I mean, you see it on TV and so forth. You can't go in and go in and touch the rocks.
Yeah.
So when we were on our Tower of London tour, we had a guide, and he was like, you know, don't go touch the rocks. They have a boundary area, like a no man's land.
Yeah.
And basically, if you step out to touch the rocks, there are people in plain clothes who will tackle you and haul you off to the police.
Holy crap.
So he was giving us a little tip. Don't think you can go out and touch the rocks. So the whole time we're there, I'm looking at people trying to figure out who the narcs are. You know what I mean? Who the Stonehenge narcs are. Who's going to tackle somebody.
Right.
So the interesting thing is, you know, in some things you see where people just kind of drive up and hop out and look at Stonehenge. Well, that used to be the way it was. You could do that. But nowadays, that's not the way it is, right? So they're trying to capitalize on it a bit more, I guess. But you have to, there's a parking lot way far away, and there's like a series of shuttle buses that drive you up to the Stonehenge. And now they have like a visitor center and all that kind of stuff there too. So they drive you up and drop you off, and then you can wander around or whatever. They're constantly going, you know. So you just hop on and you know, just whatever time you have to be back. We were on a bus thing, and so we had to be back to the bus at a certain time. But anyway, so we saw Stonehenge, and it was really interesting and wonderful. And we walked around the whole thing, and kind of one of the funny things that happened at Stonehenge was, you know, it's my family and my mother-in-law was with us, and so she was going to take a picture of the family at Stonehenge.
Sure.
So we all line up, you know, and there's, I mean, it's just lousy with people, so we're trying to get up as close to the no man's land as we can to get, you know, so we got people in the background. And she takes the picture with my wife's phone, and my wife looks at it. She's like, "Mom, you can't see Stonehenge." She lined it up so we blocked the Stonehenge.
What's the point?
She framed it. She framed it so you can't even see Stonehenge.
What's the point?
Well, you got to see the thing behind. That's why we're there.
Yeah, right.
So it was funny. So that was the first of so anytime she took a picture, it was always like, "Well, you can't see, you know, Windsor Castle." And anyway, as a running joke, I'm sure it was funnier to us, but
you can't see me smiling.
You can't see. My eyes are closed. So the weird thing is, I get on this bus to go back to the parking / you know, gift shop area.
Yeah.
And there's this guy on the bus. And he's probably, 6'3", 6'4", tall guy. And he's got long hair. He's probably just a little bit younger than me and you, you know, maybe a little younger than you. And he looks so familiar. And he's got his kids there and everything. He's dressed like, you know, he's a rock and roll guy. He's got on an old, blanking on the name here all of a sudden. But anyway, he's got an old rock and roll t-shirt on and everything. And I whispered to my wife, I said, "That guy is somebody, but I cannot place him. He's in a band, but I can't remember the band." I still can, unfortunately. I said, he's not like a front person. He's not somebody who's really famous, but I've seen him in a music video, and he's like, you know, the drummer or, you know, some keyboardist guy in the back.
Was it David Coverdale?
No, it wasn't David Coverdale.
Oh.
No, he had dark hair, and you know, he was somebody that I'd seen in a music video at some point in time. Now, when I got back to the hotel, I looked and looked. I could not find anything to match this guy. Now, the Glastonbury Music Festival was going on while we were there. It was a big music festival, lots, you know, like over the course of most of a week and everything. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that this guy was somebody. I just cannot name them. Now, a little bit later, I'm going to tell you somebody that I met who was famous. Well, I didn't meet them, but I saw them. So, no. So, but I couldn't place it. So my wife is like, she's like, "No, he's not. He's just some doofus in a concert t-shirt." Quit, you know, saying stuff like that. You know, really putting the screws to me about this, you know. I'm like, okay, maybe not, but I'm pretty sure, you know, he looks really. And my brother-in-law is like, "Yeah, he looked kind of familiar," but, or not my brother, my kids are like, "Yeah, he looked kind of familiar, but, you know, maybe not." So anyway, this sets something up for later about famous people. So anyway, you know, we leave there, all is good. And another evening, we went on this Jack the Ripper tour in London. So you get on this old double-decker bus, and you drive around London, and you see all of the Jack the Ripper murder sites, or whatever you want to call them. It's really quite gruesome.
Right.
But we had this great guide. His name was Winston. He was a very proper British gentleman, and he was telling us all about Jack the Ripper. You know, it was kind of like going on a tour with Tony Williams a little bit. I know everybody doesn't know who Tony Williams is, but Miles does, so. He was kind of like a taller, more normal-looking Tony Williams. But what cracked me up was he was prone to fits of rage.
Yeah.
Which even added to the whole Jack the Ripper thing, because you have to go on these bus tours over there, at least where we were at. You have to go to the bus station, which I'm sure Mick, he would know all about, right? Mick Twill. So
yeah.
You go to the bus station to catch the bus. Well, you have to go. And it's just, you know, full of people. It's crazy. And all the lines intersect. And you got to get on there. And there's buses driving in and out. And it's just chaos. And yeah. controlled chaos. And so Winston has to wear this while he's getting people checked in and outside the bus in the bus station, has to wear one of those orange vests. And he's checking everybody. We don't have to wear it. We can just walk around and get hit by any bus, but apparently he has to wear this orange vest. And the only reason I know that is because as soon as we get done and everybody's on the bus and we're getting ready, he gets on the back of the bus, rips off this orange vest. Bloody vest, I hate wearing this. And starts throwing it down on the ground. I was just like, this guy is psychotic. He was so angry about having to wear this orange vest. It was just comical, but nobody was, you know, nobody was supposed to be paying attention to him at that point. He was just kind of getting himself together. And then we drove. He flings the thing down in the seat. Bloody vest. I hate, you know, I'm just like, wow, this is kind of weird. And so then we get to the place and he's get to the first place and he's all proper and, you know, and he had his own Dane, which was Chris, our bus driver. And we're going to walk from here, and Chris will park the bus over there, and we'll get back on the bus eventually here as we go through the tour. So so Chris is, you know, has to put up with crazy Winston all day, all night long here. So we're walking through the streets of London, and these... And I mean, some of these places are really not that much nicer, maybe, than they were when Jack the Ripper was there. I don't know. It was kind of, it was kind of a little sketchy a couple times, you know. You'd be surprised. I was kind of taken aback at how much graffiti there was in London. I didn't expect to see there seemed to be more graffiti there than there is in St. Louis, which is a lot of graffiti in St. Louis. But
wow.
So anyway, Winston takes us on this thing, and it starts to rain, starts to drizzle, and you know, we had little backpacks. Everybody had something to carry, a bag, and we had rain gear, and we pulled out our raincoats and put them on, and you know, we weren't going to get soaked because the tour goes on; it does not stop for a little rain. I mean, come on, it's London, for Christ's sake.
Sure.
And so then Winston reaches in. He's got kind of like not a briefcase. What do you call those things that are not briefcases? A satchel, let's say.
Yeah.
And he pulls out this, you know, kind of dollar poncho thing that you'd pick up at the gift shop or something.
Yeah.
And he starts, as he's still talking as he's doing this, and he starts trying to unfold it so he can put it on because he's wearing like a tweed jacket and the whole thing, you know. And it's sticking, and he's talking, and he's getting more and more aggravated with this poncho. He's like, you know, he's like, I guess I'm just going to have to get wet tonight. This bloody poncho, I must have had it too close to the radiator. I wish I would have recorded this, but, you know, you're not supposed to. Anyway, I was trying to be good, And so then this lady goes, oh, Winston, I'll help you. And then these two women, like, peel this poncho thing apart and finally get it to where he could put it on. And he was all happy. But it was just this build of anger, you know what I mean? And it's all this Jack the Ripper. It's like, oh, this guy's going to kill somebody with this orange vest and this raincoat. My Lord. But he was a really good teller of the story, and he told, like, all the, you know, he's like, I don't want to tell, you know, we don't know who Jack the Ripper was, you know, there's a lot of theories, and so he went through the theories in the various spots, you know what I mean, to tell you what the prevailing theories were. It was really quite interesting. He did a great job. It was like a 3.5-hour walking tour, partially. We partially drove and partially walked. And and he was very, very, very dry British humor because he's like, you know, and here we are in the, I can't remember the name of the district, but we were in this area. He's like, and you have to remember, this was the edge of London in those days. The edge of London, and folks would be over on this side would be, you know, kind of your poorer people, you know. And they would struggle to make money, and so women would have to sell themselves in order to pay the rent and all this kind of thing. Because these people that he killed, they always say they were prostitutes, but most of them really weren't like prostitutes in a like a lifelong kind of sense. They were prostitutes right. because they couldn't pay the rent, and so they had to go prostitute themselves to make a couple bucks.
Yeah.
So like on you know, on the end of the month they were prostitutes, but in the beginning of the month they're just regular people. So and he goes, but in recent years this area has become much more affluent, and apartments go for the flats go for about $1.25 million apiece. And it's a really nice place to live, except for the fact that every 2 hours you have a Jack the Ripper tour come by. Because there was more than one, and they're all fighting for space. So, like, there'd be, like, you know, 30 or 40 yeah. people following a person, and you'd see 30 or 40 people on another corner that was just right on the same street, and they're all
yeah.
trying to make money. It was really, that was probably, I mean, as far as kind of quirky British stuff, that was the quirkiest British thing that I encountered while I was there. But that guy was just a hoot. He did a really good job of presenting the material, but his little bursts of outrage were just kind of the icing on the cake. He didn't even realize that, you know, I was paying attention to that, but it was just too funny to me. I was just like, this guy, any moment he's going to pull out a knife and just start stabbing people, I swear.
This is how we get it.
It's like, right, Chris, bring the bus around. We're all getting wet, Chris.
So, right.
So, yeah, Chris would just sit in the bus. He would never get out. Yep, he was trying to avoid, I think. It's best to avoid Winston when he's doing his tour, I think. So, yeah, it was very funny. And I believe a lot of those little tour guides have a little flag so you can keep track yeah. of them. I think he purposely yeah. left the flag on the bus because that was another one of those things that was just going to enrage him. So he held up his satchel. I don't have my flag. Let's hold up the satchel and we'll be fine here. And so we walked around London. It was nice, and we did a bunch of other stuff that really wasn't super interesting, other than. You know, Windsor Castle is just, you know, stupid, crazy, you know, over the top with, you know, the royal family stuff and everything. And there's just so many people. So many people. It was just parts of this vacation were my worst nightmare because I'm in a sea of people. The only saving grace is I was mostly taller than everybody. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I wasn't, like, being suffocated by them. I was just being annoyed by them greatly, so.
Right.
But, you know, you have to do what everybody wants, the family wants to do, so.
Sure.
And I will tell you, another thing we did, because I had to, because I just cannot not do this, but McDonald's in the United Kingdom is not the same as McDonald's in the United States.
Okay.
In any way, shape, or form, in this, it says McDonald's. It's a hamburger of some sort, but it's not the same. And for some reason, over in Europe, and I saw this in more than one place, but they have this strange notion that Americans love barbecue sauce,
like yeah.
tremendously. So there's this American yeah. burger that's just smothered in barbecue sauce. And I'm like, I have never put barbecue sauce on a hamburger in my life. Yeah. I do not want barbecue sauce on a hamburger. I didn't understand why, you know.
It's like a sloppy Joe or something.
Yeah, it's like a sloppy Joe. Exactly. So anyway, that's kind of the highlights of the funny stuff for London. And then next we were off, I'll kind of tie back this famous thing, because we went to Dublin, Ireland.
Dublin.
So Dublin, we left, we had a really weird time leaving London because we flew to Dublin from London and, we ended up getting our lunch for free because we ate lunch at the hotel, and
yeah.
We told the lady, we put our order in. We had time to kill, like maybe a couple hours before the car came pick us up, and we had to check out of the hotel. So, you know,
yeah.
Oh, by the way, I had the smallest bathroom I've ever been in London. I should go back real quick. Literally, well, it was like saloon doors to get into the bathroom. But they went from top to bottom, so they were full doors, but they split in the middle, like saloon doors.
Yeah.
And so you opened them up, and they were barely wider than my shoulders. And literally, you step into the bathroom, one step, toilet's in front of you right there, no more way to, can't step that way. Turn to your right, or turn to your left, there's the sink. Turn to your right, there's a shower.
Yeah.
Basically, you could go in, you could step in, shut the doors, and sit on the toilet. That was all you could do in this bathroom, or get in the shower. So,
yeah.
Using the sink was a little bit difficult because the toilet was there. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Smallest bathroom I've ever. It was almost like maybe 6 phone booths. That's about how big the bathroom was with all of amenities in it.
Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, woo. For a big guy, that's a small bathroom.
Yeah.
But I will say one of my favorite bathrooms because it was actually really clean and it functioned great. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we're getting our lunch and we've got hours to kill. We had to check out. So we just ate at the hotel because the car was going to come pick us up. So Lily takes our order and she disappears. And we're waiting and waiting. And we're like, well, I thought we'd have enough time. I don't know, you know. And then the manager comes out and goes, oh, I'm so sorry. We totally forgot to make your lunch. I'm so, so sorry. And we're like, that's okay. We still got time. If we want to put it in now, that'd be great. Okay. You know, I'll go make your lunch. We'll make sure your lunch gets made. So they come back. She comes back in like another 35 minutes, finally with some food. Gets my order totally wrong. It's not even anything that I ordered. And she goes, I'm so sorry. Don't worry, you're not going to have to pay for this. Not going to pay. And then we never saw our original hostess again. I mean, basically we saw her once, gave her the order, and I think she just left. She quit or something. I don't know what happened. And so we barely got our lunch ate before the car showed up, and we had to run off to the airport to go to Dublin. And the Dublin thing was just, it was just crazy. I mean, it was like, you know, it was cue the music from Home Alone or whatever. Dun, da dun, da 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 dun, dun, dun. Because once we land in Dublin, it's like we have to catch this bus in order to get downtown. And so, you know, like hard to get the luggage, can't find the luggage, can't find this. We run out to this bus. This other bus comes flying up, takes the mirror off the bus that's parked, and just like throws it at us on the sidewalk. You know, this guy just came screaming in, pulls the bus in. And it's like, our bus just lost a mirror, because I guess that was the bus we were supposed to get on. And then the guy's like, well, we can't take this bus now. And he's going, so then we're like, well, what are we going to do? He's like, don't worry. And then there was another bus that pulls up, and then he kicks the driver out of that bus. The driver from the bus that just lost his mirror hops in there, and then we all get on and take off. It was just like Looney Tunes.
What?
So they're like, yeah, I know. It was weird. So then we have to put we have all our luggage. So we have to put our luggage on the bus. And so I'm telling my kids, just put your luggage on, you know. Most of these things, the luggage kind of sits down in like a little bit of a well.
Yeah.
You know? Well, not, and I, they usually do that, or they pull straps across to keep the luggage in.
Right.
So.
Right.
That doesn't happen. And we take off, and this guy's like driving the night bus from Harry Potter. It's just have you ever remember that? He drives real fast.
Yeah.
It is just insane driving. And one of our smaller suitcases comes shooting off of the luggage area and like punches this woman in the leg really hard.
Oh my God.
It was like you hear a boom. Ah! son's like, Dad, are you? I'm like, I'm not saying nothing. We're not talking about this. We're not looking at this.
Isn't that our bank?
Yeah. Shh.
No, it's fucking not. Shut up.
That's right. So this guy helps her and puts it up on the thing. She's like holding her leg.
Oh my leg!
Oh my leg!
Oh my leg!
I'm like, we can't tell him anything. I'm not going to get drawn into court in Ireland here. Thankfully, she got off before we did. Whew.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure she was pretty pissed about that bag slugging her. I mean, it just, boom. It sounded like somebody, like, threw her against the wall. It was terrible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my Lord. She was fine. She walked off on her own power. But still, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a bit scary there for a minute.
Yeah.
So then we finally get the hotel, thank goodness, and it's an old hotel, and there's all these elevators overseas are so tiny. They're incredibly tiny. So this elevator could hold maybe three people. I mean, on the sign it says it could hold six, but I can't imagine that six people want to rub bellies in this elevator and go up together. Not to mention the fact that I just don't think they could handle it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we made it to the hotel, everything was fine. It was kind of late, we had dinner and so forth and went to bed. But the next day we went to what was called the Cliffs of Moher, which is, you know, kind of a spectacular natural cliffside that's all black rock and, you know, interesting. And you can look it up. And so we go to the Cliffs of Moher, which is out in the countryside in Ireland, and take this bus ride. And it's kind of interesting to see all the Irish countryside as we go out there. And we get to the cliffs, and then, of course, it starts raining like a motherfucker. But you could still see. So the upside was that you could still see. And you have to walk up the Cliffs of Moher to go see the lookout, you know what I mean, and everything.
Sure.
And it's just torrential rains. So we walk up, we got our rain gear, we walk up. At this point, my brother-in-law joins us in Dublin, and his luggage got lost. And so he's got nothing but what he's wearing. He's getting soaked, which is great. And but we make it, we see the Cliffs of Moher, and then everybody else goes into the visitor center. My son and I, we walked up, because there's two sides to it, right? So you can go on one side and go on the other side. So we go to the side, and there's a guy playing bagpipes in the rain. It was just the weirdest.
Yeah.
He, up there, he's playing for tips, basically. He was up on the cliffs playing the bagpipes. I don't know. That was a little weird. And so then he and I finally make it down to the visitor center. And, you know, where our raincoats were, we're pretty dry, but our, you know, legs are wet. And the visitor center now is just full of people because of the rain keeps coming down harder. And so then, of course, got to go to the bathroom. I mean, you know, everybody's got to go to the bathroom.
Sure.
So all the bathrooms are jam-packed with people. Well, I happened to spy down this kind of little hallway next to an elevator, one of these tiny elevators. There was this unisex bathroom. It had the sign on there, you know. It said men and women. And there was only a couple of people waiting. And so I told my son, I said, come on. Well, you know, there's like four people here. We'll just wait in line at the unisex bathroom.
Sure.
It's probably a one-holer. Yeah. You know, we'll wait a few people and go to the bathroom. It'll be great.
Yeah.
So we're waiting in line, and one person comes out, and then, like, two more people come out, and I'm like, well, this is the weirdest one-holer. There's more people coming out than are going in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, men, women, whatever.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, this is an interesting situation. And so then we get up to the door, and, you know, we the door is not locked. And people are just going in the door. And I'm like, well, this is even more bizarre, don't you think? And so I open the door, and literally it is a bathroom with like 25 stalls.
And what?
It's a bathroom with like 25 stalls. And men and women are going into the stalls side by side.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. And then they come out, they wash their hands at the sinks, and then they make their way out, you know?
Yeah, why not?
Well, it's, and he my son looks at me and he's like, you know, what the hell's going on here, Dad? And I'm like, well, if you got to go.
Yeah.
So we went in. And, I mean, these are the European stalls, so they go all the way to the floor. They pretty much went all the way to the ceiling. There was a little air space at the top, but it was like 7-8 feet in the air or something. Yeah, yeah. So basically I peed in between these two old ladies in a stall.
All right.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that was interesting. And then, yeah. You know, it was weird on the way in, but, you know, on the way out, I was like, that just makes perfect sense. Why do we have all, I mean, we could just make bigger bathrooms, right?
Right, why not?
I mean, maybe you have a door that goes to a few urinals or something on one end, but yeah. Just have all these stalls and everybody just goes and takes a whiz or whatever, you know?
Right.
We're all adults here, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I don't know. But at first, you know, I was a little shaky there. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
What in Sam hell are you women doing?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just lousy with people. But, yeah, it was a weird experience. That was my first unisex bathroom experience. I mean, other than, you know, in people's houses when things happened. But anyway, you know, in public.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just about done with this phase of it, we'll say. And so then we flew from Dublin to Paris. And we're at the Dublin airport again. And we're getting ready to fly out. And we're waiting, you know, you have to be there early and go through security and all that. And I'm like, there's this woman that looks so familiar to me. And I'm like, and she seems to be with like her boyfriend or husband. They're both older, probably in their 40s or almost 50. And I'm like, I just could not place her, right? So unfortunately, I stared at a lot of people apparently on this vacation. But I'm looking at her and I'm looking at her and I'm looking at her. And I'm like, oh, I think I know who this is. If not, it really looks like this person. But since my wife gave me such a really hard time about Stonehenge, yeah. I'm not going to say anything.
Sure.
Because I don't want to hear about it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, we get on, everybody boards the plane, this couple boards the plane as well, and we fly to Paris. And then that night in Paris, I look up pictures, and I'll be damned if I didn't fly from Dublin to Paris with Pam from True Blood.
Wow.
So the lady who plays Pam, which is, I'm blanking on her name now, but you said you were watching True Blood, which I thought was kind of funny, but you know who, it's Eric's partner in the club, the woman, she's a little bit older.
Yeah.
She was on the plane with me and my family. Didn't fly first class either. She flew regular like everybody else here. And,
really?
And her husband. Now, the reason that I finally made a positive ID when I looked at pictures, because she wasn't made up at all. She was like sans makeup and very, you know, normal looking person. But her husband is, apparently, I didn't even realize this until I looked it up. He is the lead guitarist and singer for a band called Lemmings out of South Africa.
Oh, wow.
And there's no mistaking him, because he looked exactly the same in the pictures as he did while I was seeing him at the airport. He looked kind of like a South African Adam Curry, if you know what Adam Curry looks like. Nowadays, not back then, but nowadays. Kind of a tall guy, you know, kind of blondish hair and everything. But yeah, so we took a flight with the Pam from True Blood from Dublin to Paris, which I thought was really interesting. And I told my wife, and she was so mad at me.
You bastard!
Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, because you give me so much crap about this guy at Stonehenge. You're like, there's no way this guy would ride on a bus with all these people to go to Stonehenge. I'm like, no, these are normal people. They don't, you know, they're not going to get a limo everywhere. I mean, these aren't like the top, you know, this isn't like a Tom Cruise kind of situation. These people, I'm sure they're like got some money, but I mean, they don't just spend it like idiots, you know what I mean? So, you know, and sure enough, then that later in the week there, Pam from True Blood hops on the plane with us to go to Paris.
Wow.
I know. Nice. And I know, you just mentioned that you were watching that, so it even ties into your, now you can look at that in a whole new light. She sat toward the back of the plane, and her and her hubby from the band Lemmings. Huh?
They were in the back?
Well, they were farther back than me because I couldn't see her after that because I wasn't going to be turning around staring at her.
Was people approaching them? Were people approaching them at all?
No, not at all, not at all.
Oh, wow.
No, I mean, they just were, I mean, they looked, you know, a little bit well-to-do, I suppose, but not overly so. He was quite tall, taller than I was, you know, but, you know, he didn't look overly out of place other than he was really, really tall. But they, you know, had nice clothes on and so forth. But it wasn't like they were, you know, they weren't flying in their sweats like some people I saw, you know, all like putting their jammies on and going, getting out playing.
Right.
It drove me crazy seeing these people, you know, people who obviously had no business being in their jammies at the airport, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, you had a lot of ass crack hanging out and stuff like that. So. Yeah. Well, no, not in a good way. Not in a good way at all. And then, you know, I'm in my jammies and getting on a plane, you know, it's like, oh my Lord. at least put on some pants. I mean, something that looks normal. These were obviously pajamas these people were wearing. You know. So, no, but yeah, I thought, get out of town. Look at that.
Nice.
Yeah. So, any questions, any clarifications for you at all? Or?
Oh, boy. No, I've enjoyed it, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good travel log.
Yeah, so probably one more week here, we'll get through Paris and Germany and so forth, and we'll... Just a few more funny things. So and everything didn't happen funny. I did a lot of stuff. I traveled basically. I mean, Britain was, or London was, we were just nonstop from time we woke up until we went to bed. It slows down a little bit as we get to the end of the trip because everybody got so tired. But just nonstop touristing, as it were.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of nonstop touristing.
Nice.
A couple of travel tips. If you go to the Tower of London, wear really good shoes because it's all cobblestones and it'll kill your feet like it did mine.
Mm.
Yeah. The crown jewels are very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw those. Hopefully you'll have a good guide. We had a guide that was our guide who was... kind of a cross between, he was kind of like a less proper, I'm blanking on his name too, Severus Snape, who played Snape in the Harry Potter movies. slightly less proper Snape was our guide, and he was very dry and very funny, and had a lot of interesting, stories and things to tell, and but a really nice guy, and didn't mind making fun of most of the people that were following him, so that was also quite good. He was asking, we were at the Tower of London, and they had a replica of a catapult sitting there, and so he was asking the people, he goes, you know what that thing is called over there? And of course, my wife says, trebuchet. Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, trebuchet. Aren't we the fancy people here? Trebuchet. Of course it's a trebuchet. Or some people may call it a catapult. But yes, trebuchet. We'll call it trebuchet. So he was really quite funny you know, kind of calling her out a little bit on the fancy pants words. Trebuchet, well, of course.